Welcome to the first episode of the second season of the Substance Use Disorder podcast series produced by Community Health Association of Mountain Plains States, better known as CHAMPS. I'm your host, Helen Ravenier, the CHAMPS Programs Coordinator for Population Health. In the second season of this series, we're focusing more on non-opioid substance use disorder and highlighting the many interesting and innovative ways stakeholders across Region 8 are addressing substance use disorders in their communities. Today, we'll be talking to Casey Crawford, an alcohol epidemiologist from the Violence and Injury Prevention Mental Health Promotion Branch of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, or CDPHE. Thank you for being here. Could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your work?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm an epidemiologist and I focus on excessive alcohol use data and prevention. Epidemiologist is really just a fancy word for someone who likes to tell stories with data. So we work with a lot of our state public health data sources. These are often self-reported surveys, as well as with data on mortality, hospitalization. And so it's really exciting to be here today to talk a little bit about excessive alcohol use, which with the critical and challenging opioid epidemic we've been facing, I think sometimes that conversation gets left out. So thanks for having me here today.
Can you talk a little bit about the alcohol use rates in Region 8, which as a reminder is Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming? What does the environment in those states look like?
So when we talk about alcohol use, we're not as necessarily worried about adult alcohol use. It's more that excessive alcohol use. And there are a number of ways that we measure excessive alcohol use. One is binge drinking, which many of you may have heard of, and that's that heavy episodic drinking. Within a couple hours, if you drink, it's usually about 4 drinks for a woman, 5 drinks for a man. It can bring your blood alcohol concentration up to 0.08 or above. And so that's really when we're thinking about impairment, intoxication, and those types of drinking patterns that can lead to both short and long-term health outcomes. So binge drinking is a really common measure we use to just look at excessive drinking across states. And in this area, the Dakotas, so what I would say is the upper Midwest and across the north of the United States, so states like the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming, and then over to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, they tend to have the highest percentages of adults that report binge drinking. Colorado is definitely up there. We usually are in the top 10 or top 15 in terms of the states with the highest adult percentage of binge drinkers. And then what's kind of unique is Utah, I believe, is consistently one of the lowest states in regards to binge drinking. You bring up the point of the environment, and so that alcohol environment that we live in really contributes to those percentages of adults that report binge drinking. And so in Utah specifically, they tend to have pretty restrictive alcohol policies. It's usually harder to find an alcohol outlet than sometimes in other states. And then there's context around norms around alcohol. Is there stigma attached to it? And Utah is just kind of this unique example, the combination of norms and policies that really tends to lend itself to having one of the lowest prevalences of binge drinking in the United States. So, you know, this region's kind of unique, but I would say that a lot of the states in Region 8 tend to have pretty high rates of binge drinking.
So you used the term binge drinking and gave us a little definition there. Are there other words that we should know and terms that we should have defined as we're discussing alcohol use?
Yeah, so when I reference excessive alcohol use, I'm really talking about 4 different types of excessive drinking. So as we mentioned, binge drinking is a big one. Binge drinking tends to be the most costly and the most deadly form of excessive alcohol use. That's specific to Colorado and across the United States. Additionally, there's some other indicators or measures that we use in public health to track adult and underage use of alcohol. And so one would be heavy drinking. So while binge drinking is that short period of time where you're drinking a lot to bring your blood alcohol concentration up quickly, heavy drinking is more consistent drinking over the course of a week. So, for example, this would be for women about 8 drinks over the course of the week, and for men about 15 drinks over the course of the week. So right now, the U.S. dietary guidelines recommend that moderate drinking is about 1 drink a day for a woman and 2 drinks a day for a man. So that heavy drinking definition is really looking at over the course of the week, are you consistently drinking more than that moderate drinking guideline? Why we track this measure is that we do know that heavy drinking can contribute to a lot of long-term chronic outcomes. So for example, there's some research that shows that even one drink a day, or even maybe even less than a drink a day, can increase your risk of things like breast cancer. So that's another really important definition and measure of excessive alcohol use that we use regularly. The other two pieces of excessive alcohol use are underage drinking, so that's any drinking by people under 21, and any drinking by pregnant women. And so those four pieces really make up the general definition of what we would consider excessive alcohol use. And so anytime that I use it, I'll either specify those specific indicators like binge drinking, or I'll just speak generally about excessive alcohol use.
What are some of the social determinants or upstream causes of excessive or unhealthy alcohol use? Or, excuse me, should I not be using a term like unhealthy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we tend to not use the term unhealthy because it just tends to lend itself to the belief that there is a healthy type of alcohol use. And because of the study, like I mentioned, around that even very small amounts of alcohol can increase the risk of certain types of cancer, we tend to not use the term healthy. Really, we were interested in measuring excessive alcohol use. And so, yeah, I think you're going to hear a lot of different terminology around alcohol. So you may have heard terms like alcohol use disorder, alcoholism, binge drinking, excessive drinking, risky drinking, unhealthy drinking. Everybody uses slightly different terminology. So I think it's really important when we do use words that we're really clear about what they mean. So I really appreciate you taking the time to really help me define excessive alcohol use for this conversation.
That's very helpful as we move forward and knowing what vernacular is really appropriate and helpful. So with that, then I suppose my real question is, what are some of the social determinants or upstream causes of excessive alcohol use or excessive drinking?
When we think about communities and we think about what are some of those broader reasons why certain groups of people drink too much, a lot of that actually comes down to alcohol availability. There are different types of availability. So availability could look like, you know, I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of different outlets where I can buy lots of different types of alcohol. So it's really readily available to me. I can access it fairly easily. And so that may increase my community's risk of having increased excessive drinking and a lot of those related harms that come with it. Availability can also look like economic availability. So there's a lot of research that shows that price is a really important measure of whether a community may be more or less at risk for excessive drinking. For example, some of the science shows that if you actually increase alcohol taxes, which is essentially artificially increasing the price of the product or the price of the drink, you can actually decrease the excessive alcohol use in that community and a lot of the related outcomes. So for example, there are some studies that show that in states that have recently increased alcohol taxes, we've actually seen declines in motor vehicle fatalities. I would really recommend that we think about alcohol as like that alcohol environment, the retail environment, how cheap is it, what types of products are available. Those are really the context that surrounds a lot of the reason why some communities tend to drink more and some communities tend to drink less. With the price conversation, we can start looking at specific groups of people and sort of see those impacts. So for example, we see that people who have higher incomes tend to be more likely to binge drink. And we believe it's because of that, again, that disposable income, so that the price sensitivity is less for those folks in regards to their alcohol purchasing behaviors. Those are just some examples of and context around what contributes to excessive drinking, especially when we really think of it from a community and public health perspective, rather than that individual level, what is that individual's specific risk factors, protective factors that may increase or decrease the likelihood they may drink excessively.
You touched on the individual impacts on health of alcohol use, but now as we're talking about community, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the sort of community health impacts of alcohol use?
Yeah, absolutely. We're probably pretty familiar with a lot of the short-term impacts of excessive alcohol use. So those may be things like what I mentioned before, alcohol-impaired driving and potentially motor vehicle crashes or fatalities that may result in that drinking. Additionally, we see a lot of connections between excessive drinking and different types of violence. So this could be interpersonal violence, but it also could be something like suicide. So for example, in Colorado, we see that among suicide decedents, about 1 in 3 were impaired around the time of their death. So that means that their BAC was 0.08 or above. Those are some of those short-term impacts that we have a lot of research that excessive drinking can contribute to that can really hurt people's health. What a lot of people are a little less familiar with are some of those longer-term impacts. So as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people don't know that even small amounts of alcohol can increase your risk of certain types of cancer. Additionally, drinking excessively over time can increase your risk of developing an alcohol use disorder, where you may need to go access treatment for that specific disorder. Additionally, there's other chronic diseases that we have varying levels of research on. But what's interesting about alcohol is that I see it as this connecting risk factor, that if we really try to work on preventing excessive alcohol use, we may actually be able to impact a lot of health outcomes that we care about and are worried about in our communities.
Can you tell us a little bit or a lot about the science of changing that behavior of excessive alcohol use? What does your department or you focus on as you look at changing that behavior?
So I work at the State Health Department in Colorado, and so our role is really to educate decision makers and community members on the data around excessive alcohol use. So that's why we collect annual survey data on both youth and adult behaviors. And also we use a lot of other data systems and data sources to try to make sure that we're monitoring trends over time in excessive alcohol use and some of those related harms and behaviors. So aside from specifically educating folks on the data, we also try to educate on the science. So that way, decision makers and community members that maybe want to be active in their local policymaking process have the best available information to share with their local folks and their decision makers. So for example, as I mentioned before, the context around alcohol in communities is really important. So a lot of the science around decreasing excessive alcohol use, as I said, is around price. So alcohol excise taxes tend to be the most common way to increase the price of alcohol at the state level. Additionally, we see that the types of outlets that are in a neighborhood, how they're clustered, and just the number of them in specific areas can really increase public nuisance, can increase violence, can increase a lot of negative outcomes around excessive alcohol use. And so one specific recommendation through the community guide that's funded through the CDC is that we really try to regulate alcohol outlets in communities to try to decrease some of those negative outcomes. So regulating could mean putting a cap on the number of outlets that you can have in your community. It could put distance requirements in place or buffers essentially around a specific outlet to say certain outlets can't be so close together. So those are just a couple of ways that we've learned over decades of research about how we can actually prevent excessive drinking and then a lot of the impacts that we just discussed.
From your perspective, what are the biggest barriers that we face as a society? And do you have any thoughts on how we can overcome those barriers?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. One of the challenges that I've observed just doing this work for about 3 years is that, you know, drinking too much is really, really normal across the United States. I know that it's true here in Colorado. And so because it's so normal, it can make it sometimes hard for people to sort of see it as a concern and see it as an issue, unless it's directly affected them. But what I would say is that we actually have a lot of research to show that excessive drinking actually can hurt people other than the drinker. So a recent study just came out that showed that About 1 in 5 U.S. adults was impacted negatively by someone else's drinking. And so these can be things like harassment. It could be the motor vehicle crashes we discussed, as well as different types of violence. So really, as a society, I think the important piece would be to start looking at this problem as a community problem and not just as an individual level problem. Obviously, there's a lot of work that needs to be done at the individual level, especially in healthcare settings. But I think if we really want to start moving that needle on measures like binge drinking that we've talked about, I think we really need to start framing the problem as a societal problem.
You kind of started to talk about that normalization piece, and I'm wondering how you see stigma or the lack thereof playing a role in this, both at that individual level that you mentioned and in that societal piece.
I think what's interesting, just based on the feedback I've gotten from talking about our data, talking about the science of excessive alcohol use, is that people tend to sort of believe that you either are an alcoholic, and I'm putting alcoholic in quotation marks, or you may drink too much, but you're fine. There's no potential risk. And I think that is a challenge, because what we really know is that about 9 in 10 people that drink too much or excessively drink may not actually meet the criteria for alcohol dependence, or what we would now call a moderate to severe alcohol use disorder. And so what that tells me is that there's probably a lot of folks out there that are drinking too much, that and it may be impacting their health, but where they may not need formal treatment, they may not need some of the resources that people with severe alcohol use disorder may need. And that there are actually a lot of prevention strategies that we know from decades of research that can really help incentivize those folks to drink less. I don't know if it's exactly stigma, but there's sort of a stigma around people with alcohol use disorders, and that there's a bright line there. And I think what we really see is that there's a lot of folks out there that could really use interventions like increased alcohol taxes in their communities. They could really have a conversation with their healthcare provider about their drinking and how it may be impacting their health. And that actually may be really effective for a lot of folks that we know are experiencing negative impacts because of their drinking.
What advice do you have for health centers or healthcare providers that are dealing with excessive alcohol use in their communities?
In Colorado, we recently surveyed a sample of the population around what's happening in primary care settings when they're interacting with their primary care providers, with their nurse practitioners. And what we're hearing is that overwhelmingly, most people are getting screened for excessive alcohol use in primary care settings. But the disconnect is that these patients are also telling us, I told them that I drank too much and no one really had a conversation with me about it. So one of my recommendations for healthcare centers is really think about the important role that they play in the health of the people that they're serving, and know that it doesn't take a 5-minute conversation to check in with someone about their drinking. It can really be a short chat about how their binge drinking or excessive drinking may be impacting their health. And that can be a really important touch point for an individual who may be in that group of people that I just talked about that doesn't need treatment, but could really benefit from drinking a little less. So that's something that I think is really important to note, is that it doesn't necessarily need to take that long, but that those healthcare providers really are an important resource for their patients, especially those who drink too much. I also would just mention that I think in my work with people who work in healthcare systems, sometimes it can be really frustrating when we're thinking about screening and brief intervention and then referral to treatment to see outcomes, to see those population level outcomes from that work, because the patients that are coming in to see you, they're living in that same alcohol environment and that retail context that you are. And so what we really need, I think, is that comprehensive approach. So that conversation you're having with the patient is so critical. And we need to be thinking about some of those population level prevention strategies that I've been talking about that can really work together to incentivize people to drink a little less.
As we wrap up, What are the top three things that you would like healthcare providers and support staff to know about alcohol use?
A couple of just takeaways. I think excessive alcohol use is actually really common. So making sure to consider that when you're interacting with people in a healthcare setting. So for example, I think often people will make assumptions about their patients, like, oh, my over 65-year-old patients probably aren't drinking too much. Where what we really know is that they actually may be binge drinking more frequently than people who are in that sort of middle age group. And so this is really important, I think, when we're talking about, you know, potentially prescribing opioids, prescribing benzodiazepines, where alcohol can really interact with those drugs and increase their potential risk for overdose. I would just want them to keep in mind that excessive alcohol use is actually really common, and it's something that their patients may be dealing with, and that they just have a critical role in having those conversations. And just don't make assumptions about people's behavior. You can screen them, ask them about it. Also, I would just want to mention to them that they have a critical role in having those brief interventions, but they're also a citizen. They're a member of their community. And so if there are specific instances where maybe an outlet is coming in your neighborhood and you're a little worried about it because you've had some public nuisance issues, or something's coming up in your state legislature specific to alcohol and you're really concerned about it, I would have healthcare system staff really think about themselves both as that professional, but also as a citizen in their community, and that there's a lot of data and information out there that can help them get more involved and feel really educated to be part of those conversations in their community. And then lastly, I would want them to take away that, and I just mentioned this, but that the work they do is critical, but it's very, very hard to see lasting impact in that type of one-on-one individual support if we're not also making population level policy change or environmental change. So if you're talking with a patient and working really hard with them to help them decrease their drinking, but four different outlets pop up in their neighborhood and it's really cheap for them to buy alcohol and it's really common and normal in their friend group or in their community for people to drink too much, that can be a really hard behavior change. So our approach from a public health perspective is to try to make neighborhoods and communities where the healthy choice is the easiest choice. And so I just would help them maybe keep that in mind and know that the same things you're struggling with personally and the same things you're seeing in your community are the things that your patients or the people you're working with are struggling with.
Well, thank you for sharing that information and advice with our Region 8 health centers. And thank you for joining us today on our very first episode of the second season of the Substance Use Disorder podcast series.
Thank you so much for having me. And I shared a lot of the resources of what I spoke about today with you, Helen. So please feel free to post those. And if anybody has any questions or wants to talk more about this topic, even if you're from another state, I'm happy to do that. So please just let me know.
Perfect. Thank you so much. This and future episodes will be available for free download at www.champsonline.org. Typed transcripts of each episode are also available. Links to the studies and resources mentioned in today's podcast will also be linked there. If you're interested in recording an interview for our series, please let us know by sending an email to helen@champsonline.org. Thank you for listening.